Welcome to the Hope Unyielding podcast. The goal of Hope Unyielding is to proclaim God's love, faithfulness, and the hope we have in Him through personal story. I'm your host, Hope Johnson, and I have the privilege of hearing outstanding people from all walks of life share stories about how God has shown Himself faithful in their journey as a Christ follower. Today I'm talking with Jackie Murch about what God did when she stepped out in faith to become a missionary in a place she didn't think she'd ever go, the Siberian tundra. Jackie Murch spent just under two exciting years in Russia as a grant writer for Agape, a Christian organization that sends medical teams to areas of need, including the remote parts of Siberia. She is retired and lives in Hamden, Maine, with her husband, Carl.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Jackie. It's really nice to talk to you again.
Yes, it's really going to be nice to just chat with you too, Hope.
Yeah. I know you were one of the first people who I knew went to Russia. And as some of my listeners know, I've been to Russia six times. I lived there for quite a while. And so I have a big history. But my first memory of you is you were home from your missions in Russia, and you were passing around pictures of these medical missions. And I was about 11 or 12. And I remember looking at those pictures and saying, that looks like the worst place in the world, and I am never going to go there. What is she thinking?
Which is exactly what I said when I saw the video of the Agape medical mission out on the tundra. I thought, oh, too much snow, too cold, that's awful.
Yeah.
I would never go there.
And then we both ended up there, and we both ended up loving it and loving the people and the culture and even the language. So so I would love to hear, since when people hear that I love Russia and that I've been in Russia, they kind of look at me a little bit strange and they're kind of like, oh, okay, so what's wrong with you? And I'm just curious, how did you get into mission work in Russia and what did you do there?
Okay, it started way back in the late 80s when we got packages of Bibles and literature from, I think it was Slavic Gospel Mission. And at that point, they had the ability to get names of people who wanted literature in Russia, and they had permission to send them. All we had to do was take the packets, which were all prepared and wrapped, and just basically mail them. And so our church did that. And from there, we got involved in helping establish a building for an underground congregation in one of the areas. And then, of course, because we did that, then there was a mission trip to see the progress on the building. And I was thrilled that I didn't get to go on that one because I did not want to go to Russia. That was all I had in the back of my mind, was cold, dark, depressing, and scary. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want anything to do with it. Happy to support the process from stateside. And of course, that changed when we did a second mission trip. And I had promised the Lord, well, the next time there is one, I promise I will go. I really, doesn't matter where it is, I will go. And of course, it turned out that it was Russia again. And I said, okay. I said, yes, Lord, so here I go. And that's how I got to Russia in the first place, and found everything about it was different than what I thought, and fell in love with the people.
So what in particular was different? Because I had the same idea as you. Russia is cold. People are mean, unsmiling. The food must be terrible. How was it different?
I think the thing that I noticed was that people are very unfriendly on the street. Mm-hmm. But once they're in their own home, behind the door, they're warm and loving and very welcoming, and they would give you the shirt off their back. And I have come to realize over time that probably that was because of all the war and the communism that took place over there. People were very protective. They had a wall up. Hmm. They did not want to be noticed. They did not want to call attention to themselves. Mm-hmm. As people, they were just amazing. I was just dumbfounded by that. That was my, I think, my biggest surprise.
That was a huge surprise for me too. I remember someone there told me this proverb and they said, Russians are like a coconut and Americans are like a peach. They said, Russians have the hard shell to crack through, but once you get to the middle, they're soft. But Americans are nice on the outside, but they're really hard to get to know.
I never heard
that. They have
the
hard pit in the middle.
I can understand where that would be true.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you worked with an organization called Agape. Could you talk a little bit about your first expedition on the tundra and what happened there? Well, first what you were doing and then what happened?
Actually, the first expedition I went on was to southern Siberia. And then I came back to the States. And when I went back to live there, and I thought it was going to be permanent. But when I went back to live there, the very first expedition we went on was to the tundra. And that was a very, it was in April. It was on, I think it was April 3rd. And you would assume, obviously, April, everything here is beginning to thaw out and things are popping out of the ground. And it was full-blown winter over there and everything was frozen. And we happened to, the reason that we went at that point in time was that they had what they called reindeer days that were taking place on the tundra, where all the reindeer Nenets herders come from all over everywhere and they congregate to have these games. Really, it's sort of like the Olympics of the North of
wow.
I want to say the North Pole, but but they have jumping games and lassoing games, and then they do an animal sacrifice, which I knew was happening, but I stayed away from that. There are all kinds of sled races, and so there are a lot of people there at that point, and that was a big draw. So the clinics were free. And people would come to get whatever help they could get. And so I was on board for that, and we did humanitarian aid. They did glasses. There was a dental clinic. In fact, there was one reindeer herder that came in because he had one tooth left.
Wow.
And he wanted to get that tooth fixed. He was afraid he was going to lose that tooth. So we had a little tiny dentist from Alabama who came on that expedition and did dental work. So that was my first experience with reindeer, and I actually got to ride on a reindeer sled. That was kind of interesting. And
I'm curious about the animal sacrifice. What religion would you say the majority of people in that area were?
I'm not exactly sure what they call it, but it's more like the spirits are in the rocks and the trees and just in nature.
Okay. So a kind of pantheist.
Yes.
Type
yes.
belief. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Now that's the native people. There's a lot of Russian Orthodox in that area too. So that would be predominantly it.
And when you were there very shortly into your time, I know that you had a car accident where I believe you broke part of your back. But I know some really interesting and good things came out of that. Could you talk a little bit about that and the fallout?
Sure. We were actually leaving, and there were a bunch of us that were going in a big bus, and then there was a lot of other people that were left behind. They were going to be taking another bus later on. So we were in, a bunch of us were in the back of this great big, they call it a Voktuvka. This looks like a big school bus. Mm-hmm. And you're driving over the tundra. There's no road. It's just sort of like a big expanse, and you kind of stay within a certain area. But the bus driver was going a little too fast. And as you can imagine, there were a lot of drifts. And so he hit one of the drifts, and it went, the bus kind of did a little skid sideways. And what happened was there were like six of us on the back bench. We hit the bench broke. Mm. We hit the floor, then we hit the ceiling, and then we hit the floor again. Oh. And there were two of us that were injured more than anybody else. There was another person that hit their head and saw stars for a while, but Dr. Olga and I both had back fractures. Mm. And I have to say, and I don't think I told you this, Hope, when I look back at the pictures, somebody had taken a picture of us sitting on that back bench, right in front of us, where we were sitting, and right near where I landed, was a great big box of reindeer antlers.
Ooh.
That somebody had as, you know, souvenirs or whatever. And I thought, Lord, I could have been speared with those. And I just felt very blessed. I thought, okay, I got hurt, but the Lord really protected me. Mm-hmm. I could have been killed, or I could have been really seriously injured. So what they did was they took us back and did a really crude x-ray and loaded us into a helicopter, which after the fact I found out was probably more dangerous than anything else we could have done, was to ride in a Russian helicopter in the middle of
I can imagine.
In the middle of a, not a blizzard, but it was bad. It was snowy. The things that came out of that, because I think I was prepared. I had a feeling from something else that had happened in the summer when I was there that I was going to, that Satan was not happy with the fact that I had left and I was over there. And I was kind of expecting something was going to happen, but I didn't know what. And so when that happened, I thought, okay, I am not going home. If this was meant to discourage me and send me home, I am not going home. Hmm. I'm here, and he's got a reason for this happening. And the pastor in the little church that we were sponsored by up there on the tundra told us afterwards that the bus driver was distraught, very distraught, because he'd been drinking. Mm-hmm. And he knew that if anybody made a complaint, that he was going to lose his job. And the pastor was very careful to tell him, you know, they're Christians and they're not going to do that. Mm. And that he was kind of taken aback by that. So over time, I don't know if the man ever did come to know the Lord, but I know over time there was a lot of conversation between the pastor and that bus driver about spiritual things. So I'm hoping that that resulted in him coming to the Lord. I don't know. Hmm. But I got a lot of good, funny material for a lot of stories from the experiences of being in a Russian hospital, because it certainly is not like anything that we experience over here. But the great thing was that I got to talk to a lot of doctors and nurses, because I had at least had somebody that could interpret a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then when I got back to Moscow, and they had me go into a private Russian hospital I was there about a week. I got a chance to witness to the lady that was in the room with me, and then there was a doctor that was English speaking, and I got to share faith with him. There's nothing like, what happened to you? to be able to open up a door, to be able to say, well, this is where I was and what I was doing when it happened. Well, why were you over there? And why were you doing this? And it's all God said was open your mouth and tell your story, because that's what it's about, is everybody's story. So I was very grateful and very blessed to be able to have a lot of opportunity to share my faith.
Wow.
So that was good that came out of it.
Wow. So God used the thing that was meant to discourage you for a lot of good. I love that.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Now, another really interesting part of your story is one you've told me about, a couple named Sergey and Valya. And I would love to hear a little bit about their story and about how your prayer, you prayed before you told me that God would lead you to the ones whose hearts he had prepared. Is that correct?
Yes.
His heart. And I love that prayer. And I'd love to hear their story and I guess your role that you played in it.
Okay. This was in the fall of 2005, and we went to the Republic of, it's an area, I don't know what to call it. Anyway, it's Tuva. They call it Tuva. And it was originally a part of the Russian Federation. It's been an independent country. It's been part of Russia. It's been, I don't know if it was in Mongolia, but anyway, it borders it. And it's the area where Genghis Khan came from.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. So we went to the city of Kizil, which is the capital. And that is actually, there's a monument there that we had our picture taken with, and it's the actual geographical center of Asia.
Oh.
In this area. And we happened to be there at the time where there was this big Buddhist festival happening. It was really eerie, I guess is the word. Apparently every 100 years they have it there. So we just happened to be there for that day and saw a lot of odd things. But anyway, we were scheduled to go to a little village, and in the morning, Dr. Bill, who was the head of Agape, asked if I would lead the devotions before we left. And so I did, and I was just praying about, talking about getting, being prepared and to, for cohesiveness with all of us and whatever. And they ended that with the prayer, Lord, you know, just lead us to the people whose hearts you've been preparing. Whoever is there and is ready to hear, just help us to find them, to connect with them. And we went on our trip, and it was a couple of hours of bumpy roads, and went to this little village, and there was a couple there that kind of stuck out. And I was talking to my translator, and she asked them some questions. What were they there for? And Valya said that she had been told years ago that she had a brain tumor. And she wanted to know if our people would collaborate with, and she had all these papers with her in a plastic bag. She wanted to have another opinion. And the fellow that she was with, Sergey, was very quiet. He never said much of anything. In fact, I don't think he said anything. He just kind of looked at her, and he'd watch her face, and then he'd watch my face or whoever she was talking to. And I said, I want to know how you make out. So when you're done, I said, will you come and find me so I can, you know how things went for you? And I went about my day, and I didn't forget about it necessarily, but I was busy with other things. And several hours later, a lady came to me and she said, there's a woman looking for you. And it was Valya. And she said, yes, they have confirmed that I do have a brain tumor and that I probably don't have long to live. Mm-hmm. And she asked a lot. She said a lot of, she had a lot of questions. Why would a, you're asking me to believe in a God, and why am I suffering like this? And why is this happening? And I had lost my husband a few years before that. And I said, you know, I lost someone I love too. And I know that that hurts. It's, there's no good answer that will make you feel better. But I said, God promises he'll never leave you. He'll always be with you. And she said, well, I haven't, I don't know why God would, why I should believe in a God that doesn't even care that I haven't eaten either. Hmm. And I said, well, why, how long has it been since you've eaten? Well, it had been a couple of days.
Wow.
And I was just horrified. And, so anyway, everything was breaking up and leaving. And I said to, I went to the a guy that was the pastor that was with us. And I said through the interpreter, obviously, we need to do something for this person. I mean, not, I know it's a medical mission, but I can't, we can't send her away with no food. She's not eaten. And so people started scurrying to look what we could round up from our, from what we had. And we brought back pickles and a couple of other things, but that's what wasn't enough. So a bunch of us put our money together and we said, can we go get some? So we went, there's a little, if you call it a store.
I know what you're talking about.
It was a little hole in the wall is what it was. Mm-hmm. We got a box of juice and we got a couple of cans of fish and some oil and a few things like that. We scurried around and got some humanitarian aid, some shampoo and combs and things like that. And they had already left, so but we had their address. So we tore off to the house and get there, and they had apparently moved from the time that the address had been written down, whenever it was. Or they hadn't given the new address. Anyway, we had to scurry around and find them, but when we did find them, they were absolutely shocked that we had come with it, this food. And somebody had given her a Russian Bible while they were there, and she was reading. And we went in, and the pastor that was there talked to her, and I couldn't tell what he was saying, but eventually you could see that she was getting kind of weepy, and she put her head down and they prayed and she accepted the Lord.
Wow.
And then he spoke to Sergey and could, I could tell it was like, you need to do this too. And he wasn't really ready for that. He said, I will, maybe I'm thinking. And I got all emotional. And she said to someone through the interpreter, do not feel bad. She said, the hole that was in my heart is now gone.
Oh.
And I'm looking around at what they were living in, and it was just nothing. I mean, it was bare nothing. Just a pretty much a bare room. And I thought, this woman is, you know, she's going to die, but she had a glow and she was different. She was definitely mm-hmm. different. And we sang to them I don't know. It still seems like it was just yesterday that happened. And I know she's gone to be with the Lord, but I expect to see her. I definitely expect to see her at some point when I go. It was one of those experiences where the verse it says, if you see a brother or sister without food or clothing, you know, don't just say be well and I'm paraphrasing, don't just say be well and, you know, go on your way if you have the ability to do it. So it was never any more real to me than it was that day.
Wow. That's a beautiful story. And God answered your prayer of bringing you to those whose hearts he had prepared.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I was just reading in Acts 8 this morning, and it was funny. We had this interview scheduled for today because it's all about Philip talking to the Ethiopian eunuch. And I thought the exact same thing. You know, this Ethiopian eunuch had just been in Jerusalem and he's reading the scroll of Isaiah, and God calls Philip down there. And this man has all these questions, and Philip is just right there and answers them all. It wasn't because he was especially persuasive. It wasn't because he was, I guess, forcing his beliefs, right. But this person was just hungry. And as I was reading that, I was thinking exactly about this story of Sergei and Valya.
Yeah. She was definitely ready and she was receptive. So,
Well, I'm sure you have lots of stories like that, but I did want to transition to a question. I was just thinking that a lot of people listening have things God may be impressing on their heart to do that's very scary to them. And I know for you, going to Russia was very scary. For me, it was very scary, but you said, yes, God, I'm going to do this, even though I'm scared. What advice would you give to those who are in a similar place where they know God is calling them to do something that they would have never chosen for themselves?
I think, and I guess I'll just have to go to with my experience. I knew in my gut that if I didn't follow through, I mean, it was so big. The whole thing seemed so big and so out there, if you will, that I thought, if I don't do this, I am always going to be sorry that I didn't trust God with it. And to step out into, I wanted to do something in my life that would make a difference for eternity. And this was an opportunity to do that. And there was I had a little saying that was hanging in my living room for years. And it said, if I can remember it now, it's been a long time. When you step out into the unknown, and I can't remember how it goes, but anyway, at the end of it, it says, you will either find solid ground or God will teach you to fly. And I thought, I'm going to have to trust him. I mean, it says, trust me, try me and trust me. And I thought, well, if I don't do that, how will I know? How will I know? And if he says he'll do it, then he'll do it. And I look at it now and I think, oh my word, Jackie, that was a big step. And I can't believe you did it, but I am thrilled. And I look at that from that point on in my life, there's a vastness to and a bigness to the experiences that I have now that are offshoots of the time that I spent there. And I can't imagine my life without that, because God is just, he's used my availability. And it was not because I was confident I could do it. In fact, I was pretty sure I couldn't. And pretty scared about that, actually. I don't know, but I think to tell somebody that's standing there and almost ready to go and not really sure, step out. Will be something solid for you to land on, or God will teach you to fly.
and I love too that Russia surprised you. And I think that a lot of us find that when we do step out in faith, that the thing that we were so scared of, there are a lot of unexpected blessings that come along with it, even if it's different than what we expected.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know anybody that has been at that spot and has taken that step that really is sorry that they did it.
Right. Yeah.
It's just everybody that, yeah, it's always like, wow, he's going to blow your socks off.
So you mentioned some offshoots of your time in Russia. And one of them that I know about is you've sometimes called yourself the box lady. And that's a great name. I love it. The box lady. Could you talk a little bit more about that? And then maybe how people who are listening could help you be the box lady.
Okay. Well, it's kind of it's an offshoot, I guess, of my working in Agape and doing the humanitarian aid and actually seeing the need in the villages. I mean, basic needs that people don't have. And there just aren't any stores. It's hard to explain to somebody who's never been there. There's no Walmart around the corner. So anyway, the box lady starts back when I was under 10, and my mother used to tell me a story on Christmas Eve, I think to keep me busy and occupied, because I was a pretty hyperactive kid. So anything to keep me calmed down or occupied while Christmas Eve was going forward. She made up a story, and every year she would add to it and embellish on it and whatever. But basically, it was a story about Mary and Johnny, or Susie and Johnny. It was Susie and Johnny and Mom and Dad, and they'd moved to a new town. Dad was sick and didn't have a job. They didn't have any money. It was Christmas time, and Susie didn't know if Santa Claus was going to know where they lived. And in the sadness, there comes a knock on the door, and it's a lady from the local church, and she has a box of clothing for Susie and Johnny, and she has some toys, and she has a Christmas meal, and even a Christmas tree. And so anyway, when I came back from Russia, and I had these pastors that I had seen in these different villages, and they would take whatever I could send, and they would disperse it out either to the church people or to villagers or combination of both. And so I used to collect stuff from the recycling center at the dump. We had a recycling room, or people would give me things, or I'd get things from yard sales, and I would mend and wash and package them up in boxes and send them to these pastors. So as I'm doing that one day, I don't know what triggered it, but I'm thinking, oh, I'm putting these things in here and these kids are going to need this and that. And I thought, oh my word, I'm the box lady. I'm the church box lady. It was, and I thought, how funny. Okay, God, that's pretty funny that you take a story from my childhood and actually bring it forward and create that. It was very funny. And I think a little humbling, because I realized that it's one of those things that, I had William Wood, who was a missionary over there, say that I had a very odd calling, that I provided these needs, but it was just an odd thing to do. It wasn't something that was very typical. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing this since 2005, and washing and mending and sorting, and people who went to Russia with me, people in the church, friends and neighbors would say, well, you know, I've got clothes. Great. Well, when I started, it wasn't very expensive compared to what it is now. So people would donate money. I don't have any clothing, but I can donate postage money. So I've sent some boxes on my own, but I haven't paid for the majority of them. But I just finished a report for the end of November, and I've been able to send out 560 boxes.
Wow.
And the total weight is just over 4¾ tons. So that's out of my basement. And so I say that because that is not anything that's coming from me. I mean, that is not me. That is all God, because who could do that? I mean, I couldn't do that. I mean, I didn't have the finances, but I could sew on buttons. I could mend a hem. I could turn a collar if it needed to be done. I could sort. And my husband laughed at me the other day when I had somebody had given me a beautiful bathrobe, fuzzy bathrobe. And I have a place in Komi, which is in the middle of Russia, that has an old age home. And I was going to send some things there. Bathrobe was going to go, but it was covered with pills. I mean, the whole thing was covered with pills. So my husband's laughing. What are you doing? I said, I'm shaving the pills off.
You have like a razor and everything, shaving the
pills. It's a little, it's like a big buzzsaw. I mean, it's like an electric razor, only it's just battery operated. But so a lot of it is things that people have cast off. And now the recycling center isn't open, so I can't get things. But it's just uncanny what people have thrown away. Really nice, good clothing. And at one point, we even had a man that was donating welding rods that I was putting in the boxes, and they were going to someone who was welding, and that person isn't physically able to do that anymore. So I'm not doing that. But I've sent toys to what they call a baby house. So we've had toys, clothing, shoes, winter coats, just about everything, some blankets or sheets.
And how much does it cost to ship a box?
Right now it's pretty pricey. It's about and the boxes run just probably pretty close to 25 pounds for the box that I send. It's about $165.
Okay, that is expensive.
It is, but I've just mailed out 8. And the only reason I've been able to do that is somebody might not be able to do a whole box, but maybe somebody could do $50. And so if you have several people that do that, there's a box. And it comes from the most unbelievable places that I'm just always amazed that this one particular person is going to send money. Or a couple of times I've gotten extra myself and I've said, okay, I'm just going to send one myself. But
Well, I'd love to open it up to my listeners to donate to your ministry if they feel led. If any of you who are listening are interested, I can put you in touch with Jackie. If you want to send me an email, my email address is hopeunyielding@gmail.com. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email and then I'll connect you with Jackie. It's a really amazing ministry because, like she said, they have nothing, absolutely nothing. And there are no stores. I lived in an area in Russia that was remote, but not nearly as remote as a Siberian tundra or Tuva, places like that. So it really means a lot to the people who receive.
Yes. One other thing too, Hope, that just kind of tickles me. I mentioned William Wood before, and he is a gentleman that was doing welding up there, and he's had a stroke now and is unable to do that. But at one point, I asked him what he could use. Well, almost all the villages have what they call a cultural center. Seems like they always have a ping pong table. Never is there a net. Or the ping pong paddles are just busted. Or you will find a basketball hoop, but no net. We've sent soccer balls and just deflate them and put a pump in and the needle to go with it. And you can pack a bunch of those and put things around it and it doesn't take up any space. So those, I've also sent that.
That's a great idea.
Soccer equipment. At one point I had a whole bunch of soccer cleats and soccer gear that I sent. And this was years ago. And Luba's sister, no, it wasn't Luba. It was Luba's cousin, actually. Sveta and her husband, Andre, they were pastor and pastorette in the Moscow region, in a little village. They were doing a children's camp, and I sent all that soccer stuff to him, and they had, the kids were just absolutely thrilled, and he said two of them said they had always dreamed of having soccer clothing, and they slept in it. They wow. put them on and slept in it. They were so excited. So, and another time I sent them, there was a couple, the gardeners who were missionaries in Kemerovo, and I sent them soccer things, and they used them to work with street kids. Hmm. And so soccer cleats and shin guards and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And again, if anybody wants to donate to Jackie, email me at hopeunyielding@gmail.com. And thanks for sharing your story. It just has so many layers. I love the layer of God bringing you full circle as the box lady and just showing what a great storyteller he is. He really is. Yes. And I think that just shows how intimately involved he is in your life and in all of our lives. And then also that he's true to his promises. You know, he pursues people, and he pursued Sergey and Valya, and he used you just like he used Philip to speak to that Ethiopian man. So right. So thankful I got to hear your story again. I know it's really encouraged and inspired me to keep stepping out and to not give up in prayer for those I love.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely hope. Thank you for giving me a chance to share my story.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Hope Unyielding. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please pass it along to someone who you think it might encourage, or share it on social media. Another way to get the word out is to rate and write a review of the show on Apple Podcasts. I pray that this episode has brought you refreshment and hope on your journey with Christ. See you guys next time.